Freedom News Hour with Walt Thiessen, Jake Towne, and Melinda Pillsbury Foster, Thursdays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines.
Hopefully not in the welfare line just yet, but you never know, because this is the Freedom News Hour, Surviving Meltdown. And I'm your host, Walt Thiessen, here with my co-host Jake Towne and Gene DiNardo. And Jake and Gene, I hope you guys aren't on the unemployment line or in the welfare line.
Not yet. Still working hard.
Well, we'll try to keep you out of it. But meanwhile, the news from overseas is not good and has not been good for quite some time. And the European officials are now trying to figure out who to hand off the hot potato to keep Greece from going under and becoming the first domino in bringing the whole European Union down. And, Jake, what, do you have some details about what's been going on over there?
Oh, yeah. In Greece, the status of the government debt, which was just downgraded today by Moody's, it was downgraded from B1 to CAA1, which is the same level as Cuba, late yesterday. The two-year notes in Greece are at 25% interest rates, and the 10-year bonds are at 16.3% interest as of today. So those are massive interest rates, and seeing the 25% on the two-year bond, that's, you know, some people might take a look at, oh, I can give them $100 or 100 euros, and I'll have 125 euros at the end of the year. But that's very, very, the outcome of that is very, very highly unlikely. What's either going to happen is that there's going to be a default in Greece, or there is going to be a restructuring of the debt where they just prolong the day that the stuff is due. Or you have like something else occurring, which some people are already talking about, whereas Greece just drops out of the European Union and starts printing their own currency. So it's a pretty volatile situation. The Moody's rating means that it's really just five notches short of default, and it means that Greece is 50% likely to either default or restructure its debts in the next 5 years. So it really kind of looks like Greece is on the ropes in terms of its government debt. The people, obviously, are still out there protesting. But no one wants to confront the fact that it's just way too much money printing that was the direct cause of all this.
So you're saying if a person were to buy or an investing company buy a Greek bond, that even if it's advertised at the 25%, that it probably wouldn't play out at 25%, or it may not play out at all, and you might lose your money?
Well, that would be the interest rate on the face value of the bond, but the likelihood of it defaulting within the next year is pretty darn high. So
Yeah. You're
taking a very large risk when you do something like that. I don't recommend it, because you're pretty much throwing your money down the toilet. Plus, even with 25% interest, it's going to be hard put to see if it can keep up with gold or silver. But
You're basically betting at that rate that if by putting your money into the Greek bond is going to be worth something in 5 years. If it is, you come out ahead. If it's not, you just lost.
Right. So these large investment banks and firms that actually, or is it just that nobody was, the percentage is so high because nobody's actually buying these bonds?
Well, part of the problem, like the credit default swap risk on these, in other words, to buy insurance on the bond, the last time I checked it was 13% for a 10-year bond. So if you buy the 10-year bond and then you want to insure it against default, which might not be the same type of deal as restructuring, but it's 13% versus 16%, so really your spread on that is just 3%, and most likely the credit default swap rate has gone up from that 13%, because that's probably about a month old or so. So if you're trying to invest safely, you're really talking at a minuscule interest rate. But at the end of the day, you know, what's going on here in Greece and really is starting to spread to the rest of the country, because the protests and the riots in Greece, a lot of people tend to forget this, but they began way back in like December of 2008. Where the workers and the government workers started protesting in the streets and rioting. And we're starting to see that just this week in Barcelona, in the country of Spain. Like, we talked about how Spain's got all these problems. You can go on to YouTube, and also reported by the New York Times and People's World. They have some live video cameras of just defenseless Spanish civilians getting beat upon like rag dolls by Spanish police armed with billy clubs and rubber bullets. So it was, and this was in one of the main squares in Barcelona, Spain. And from the video, the people were just sitting there, and the police just charged them and start beating the crap out of them.
And of course, in Greece, a number of the issues that they're facing over there that are making the demonstrators so persistent and so angry is extremely high unemployment. They lost all their government retirement and other benefits without any kind of a payoff in terms of any economic growth or anything like that. And basically, the social safety net that they've all been relying on for so many years is falling apart, and the people are reacting badly to it. And
can't blame them.
Oh, yeah, sure. If you're used to something, you want to keep it going.
Yeah.
What they don't realize is that the way that they were paying for their social safety net was by borrowing to the hilt and creating money out of thin air. And
What's the saying? Like, the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money.
Yeah.
And that's what these countries are unfortunately finding is the case. And to highlight what we talked about, I guess, in more depth in our show last week, is everything that's kind of going on with the European Central Bank, and they're talking about hiring the head of the Italian Central Bank, Mario Draghi, and he's a former Goldman Sachs alum, and Goldman Sachs restructured the debt of Greece, really, and gave it free cash back just before Greece joined the EU to enable it to meet the requirements of the EU, like the government budget had to be a certain percentage of the GDP, et cetera, et cetera. And so these investment bankers know the weaknesses of these countries, and what's most likely happening is that they're being bet against. And someone like a Goldman Sachs guy gets in kind of in a position of power there, and who knows what's going on with the IMF right now. To me, what it looks like is kind of like a raiding party by these smart money bankers. And in some ways, who can blame them? Because it's a definite problem. It certainly is completely unsustainable. The thing is, they just I think Goldman Sachs was just subpoenaed today on a possibly unrelated matter. But they play the agent. They find out all the details, and then they bet against them. So it's kind of an interesting strategy, and obviously it kind of does pay off for them, because whatever else you're going to say, their executives take home massive bonuses.
And you're right, the indictment today, no one really knows what's in the indictment, or not the indictment, it's not an indictment, I'm sorry, the subpoena that was issued today to Goldman Sachs. No one really knows what's in the subpoena, although there's a lot of speculation on Wall Street and around Main Street America about what it might be. Most of the major media are projecting it probably has to do with the allegations that came out of the Senate subcommittee hearing, whose report was issued in April of this year, which basically said that Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank and the others did exactly what you just said, Jake, that they took position one way and then told their customers to take the position the opposite way. Heck of a way to earn a living.
A lot of integrity there.
Oh, yeah, it's a ton of integrity. And, of course, what's happening over in Greece is basically they're up against a wall, because the politicians over there have been trying to get everybody to tighten their belts, so to speak. They've been trying to get the people to tighten their belts. They've been trying to get the government itself to tighten its belt. They're trying to get the European Central Bank to kick in large portions of money to help cover the overall deficit. And basically what Greece is facing is a $40 billion deficit for the next year that they can't fund. Without that, basically the country goes under. And the European Central Bank doesn't really dare let that happen because that becomes the first domino in a series of dominoes, probably followed in close order by Portugal, Spain, Ireland, and then a few of the other countries, and pretty soon the entire European Union falls apart. Not only that, all the countries get racked by the massive monetary inflation that it would take to try to kick everything back into gear. So it's a very, very serious situation, and very worth watching for us, because as a number of IMF officials have said, if Greece goes under, that doesn't just affect Europe, but it basically puts America into recession as well, all by itself, which is an interesting thing to say, because really we're already in recession. It's just that the corporate numbers don't show that. And what they're essentially saying is the corporate numbers reverse to, and even by their standards, we become in recession. Not a good situation. Meanwhile,
you could say an alternative would be maybe not a good one, but they could go off of the euro, right, Greece?
That could be a possibility, something that they don't really want to push them to do if they can help it. But if the European Central Bank officials come to the conclusion that dumping Greece might actually help save the euro, then they would probably do it. The bad news is that would really turn Greece into basically another banana republic, and all kinds of hell would break loose out of that.
Right. And part of the difference is, like, the European Central Bank works differently than the Federal Reserve System here in the U.S. And the main way that it goes about is that what the European Central Bank does when it creates new money is a lot of times it just auctions it off at an interest rate to the highest bidder from all the other countries' central banks.
As opposed to the Federal Reserve, who gives it away to their friends?
Well, yeah. And the thing is, what the European Central Bank also does is it requires collateral, and they give the collateral a haircut. So let's say you're Germany, and you need some more euros to fund your socialist budget. So you go to the European Central Bank, you bid on a lot of money, you get a certain amount of it, and it's proportioned out to the rest of the central banks that bid on it depending on the interest rates that they put in. You get your new money, but you have to give collateral a lot of the times, and you could keep your own treasury bank, treasury certificates. You could also use the Greek government debt as collateral, and the collateral would be evaluated, and they tick off 10% or whatever. I guess what I'm talking about is a little bit of repo, but a lot of the European countries, it's all kind of like piggybacked on each other's debt. They get debt from the other country. They base it, okay, now you give us some money from the European Central Bank. And if anything ever goes wrong with the loan, then whatever that underlying asset is belongs back to the European Central Bank. So it's a little bit convoluted, but Greece going off its own to its own currency, where it would obviously be devaluing like crazy, that would cause a lot of havoc in Europe. Every country.
I think you may also have been generous to Greece when you said they'd have to take a 10% haircut. It'd probably be closer to a 95% haircut.
Well, I was referring to the percentage haircut is actually up to the European Central Bank, but say they never value it at 100%. They'll always take some amount off.
Right, exactly. And this is kind of a foreshadowing of what we could be facing here in this country, and we're already starting to see a number of things happening, including what Jake alluded to earlier, the fact that a subpoena has been handed over to Goldman Sachs. There's a lot of speculation about that, but there's also continuing activity going on in the MERS area with foreclosure cases. And Gene, I know you have a report about what's been going on, particularly with a decision that was rendered in an Oregon foreclosure case. What are the details?
Yeah, this was a district court that was deciding Oregon case, and it just happened this week, and it was basically a federal judge in Medford rebuked the industry's sloppy practices in blocking the seizure of a Jacksonville home that's a small town in southern Oregon, and at the same time, mortgage issuers turned to the state legislature to find a quick fix to the legal quagmire. So District Judge Owen Panner questioned whether big banks should be allowed to foreclose without court supervision, as is required in 23 states, but not Oregon, where one in every 500 homes is in foreclosure right now. And that's actually above the national average. Panner specifically warned of problems in cases involving mortgage electronic registration system. That's, again, the MERS system. which was set up by the banking industry. He said, the MERS system raises serious concerns regarding the appropriateness and the validity of foreclosure by advertisement and sale outside of any judicial proceeding. Given the numerous problems I see in nearly every non-judicial foreclosure case I preside over, a procedure relying on a bank or trustee to self-assess its own authority to foreclose is deeply troubling to me. And, this is just obvious, and, he's pointing out the fact that they just kind of walk in and say, well, we own the house, and they don't really need any sort of proof in these non-judicial foreclosures. So on Thursday, at the same time, basically the same time, the mortgage and banking industry turned to the Oregon legislature for help. The House Judicial Committee entertained a last-minute amendment to an affordable housing bill, there you go, that would rid the recording requirements holding up MERS foreclosures. Lobbyists for banks, credit unions, and title companies said the amendments were needed to lift a cloud over thousands of Oregon homes. So the industry is going at it at the opposite direction, trying to just get the requirements and the restrictions lifted so they can pretty much do what they will. And this is something they actually tried on the federal level, I think about a year ago, and it failed mainly because there was a lot of doubt whether the feds really have the constitutional right to impose that upon the states. But, they really favor these moves at the federal level, like all, I guess cartel is the best word to use. If you can get something instituted at the federal level, you don't have to deal with the 50 states, and that's exactly what these guys are doing now. Everything's in the state court. So this is, I think most of the cases so far have been going actually for MERS, but this is an exception. And there's six other cases in the district court right now that came to the same conclusion. So
you mentioned that there was some sort of legislation before the state legislature, and the banks and the credit unions said that it needed to be passaged because it would lift a cloud around this issue. Did they really say that?
Yeah, it said that's what they claimed. It said that the amendments were needed to lift a cloud over thousands of Oregon homes. Well, the cloud's not.
I guess the cloud is that it
has
part of them
cloudy.
To see which houses they're going to just grab. Is that the cloud?
Yeah, they want their houses back, And Phil Curran, who's a real estate attorney in Portland, said that the legislation was actually, he called it gut and stuff, and will emasculate the recording requirements. It should be strongly opposed. It's obvious what they're trying to do. I mean, we've talked about this on the show. It's the titles are just really cloudy. In some cases, they have no clue. In other cases, they just don't want to go through the paperwork. So
essentially, they're saying, well, we know that there's all these problems, so let's just ignore all the problems by just wiping them away.
Yeah, let's just get the show on the road.
So it doesn't really make any difference that MERS doesn't provide any kind of a paper trail. That's not important. What's important is the banks being able to grab the houses.
Well, they want to grab the houses and resell them.
And resell them, right.
Yeah. And, turn them into assets that are producing or get turn them into money or whatever. And, the people are in the way. And, the judge made a comment. He said, I know these people haven't made their payment for I forget how many months it was, but he goes, it's really beside the point because there's no clear proof of title and you can't just walk in and take a house. So he kind of was taking a judicial approach. In the states that don't have the judicial approach, the MERS has basically been able to pretty much skate through in most of the cases, not all of them. So.
And it's probably something that's going to continue with us for quite some time. In fact, Jake, aren't we seeing a lot of precursor to future MERS type cases because of what's happening with the housing market?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that one of the things that we cover on the show all the time is just kind of how consistently over the past year is how bad the housing situation really is. And the mainstream media just came out this week with, or kind of throughout the Memorial Day weekend, with reports that a double dip in housing is confirmed, which just about anybody can see by walking around their neighborhood and seeing all the homes for sale.
Mm.
About 28% of new home sales are now directly due to foreclosures, which is about five times normal than higher than the normal levels in a housing market. The Case-Shiller housing index has now dropped to 32.7% from the peak
from 5 years ago in 2006. The spokesman for Standard & Poor's, David Blitzer, said, quote, home prices continue on their downward spiral with no relief in sight, unquote. And this is even due, there was a, from mid-2009 onward, you had about a 5% increase, mainly due to the government throwing everything it possibly could at it, bailing out Fannie and Freddie, $8,000 home buyers credit, all these other things that they tried to do. It's completely failed because there's just way too much supply out there. And guess what? Every single city in the last month reported a loss. Some cities like Phoenix was at negative 8%. Minneapolis was negative 10%. Chicago was negative 8% over the past year. Portland, Oregon, close to where, Gene, where you're from, minus 8%. And guess what the only city was that posted a gain over the last 12 months?
Las Vegas.
I'll give you a clue. It's not in any state. It has its own particular territory. It has an economy highly based on taxation and service with no manufacturing to speak of whatsoever.
San Juan?
No. I think we all know what it is. Washington, D.C.
Oh,
Washington, D.C. is the only city to post a home price gain of 4.3% over the past 12 months, and obviously that's just from all the money that D.C. is shelling out to its own bureaucrats and the government.
Their salaries never go down.
and I'll tell you what.
Get their raises.
I'll even tell you something that kind of contradicts even that point, because I live about 45 to 50 miles outside of D.C. in a small town in Virginia. And my wife and I often go out to the local neighborhood and walk, you know, get some exercise in and so forth. I've been watching the real estate values and the prices being asked for houses. And at about the time the financial crisis hit, typically houses in this neighborhood were selling in the range of like $350,000, $400,000, something like that. These same houses, right now, they're asking in the range of $250,000 to $275,000.
A slight discount.
So, yeah, a very slight discount. Now, we are just beyond the sprawl from D.C. I mean, the sprawl kind of ends about 15 miles from here. But nevertheless, we're close enough that we certainly participate in a lot of what happens in the Northern Virginia and D.C. area. And so when I hear a report that says that Washington, D.C. is the only one that's come out ahead, I have to kind of scratch my head and say, how far out? Because I'll bet you it's pretty darn close to the Beltway itself. It's probably not all that far out that those numbers hold up.
Now, where do you
This is the entire District of Columbia, so anything outside that would not be covered.
And yet everything outside that is where all the money is, so that's what makes it interesting to me.
The other thing that we've covered on this show is the prices do not reflect the fall in interest rates since the end of the boom, with the interest rates were about 6%, and so the prices are actually much lower than they appear because the interest rates are so much lower. So,
right, and that would be U.S. Treasury interest rate went from like 2.9 to just over 3% on the 10-year bonds today, and I guess that's one of the other things that could very well happen if the dollar goes into crisis is you have rising interest rates, and it's going to put a huge load on all the people that are trying to pay mortgages that do not have a fixed rate, like the ARMs. Like you've talked about this all the time, Walt. All these resets that are coming up, it's not good. And they're at the end of the month. You have the Federal Reserve's money printing program, QE2, coming to an end June 30th. You've got the IMF money for Greece. They're to advance them more cash to the country of Greece is due on June 29th, which also happens to be the day that the Greece government runs out of money.
Exactly.
Officially. So it's a very interesting time that we live in, and June is looking, just started, but it's already looking like it's going to be a pretty rocky month.
We also have our debt limit, which is, what, August 1st? Is that what it is?
It's just small beans, yeah.
Yeah, it is. A couple trillion here and there.
Sounds like the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Right.
And, of course, D.C. may be celebrating higher housing prices, but it's also ground zero for some of the worst unemployment in the country, and unemployment is not looking good, is it, Jake?
No, ADP came out yesterday, I believe, with its payroll results, and that private non-farm businesses have added only 38,000 jobs in the country. And ADP, of course, is the company that receives a lot of the payroll slips and does a lot of the payroll for many large companies and small companies. So it's down quite a bit. April had been 177,000 increase, which had led to a lot of optimism in the market. 38,000 is not something to brag about. And coming out tomorrow will be the Bureau of Labor Statistics unemployment or results. And last month was 422,000 new claims for unemployment. So 38,000 created, 422,000 lost the last month, and we don't know what the number is quite yet coming up, but things on the job front are looking pretty grim.
Very grim, and what all this adds up to is if the economy is teetering, which it is, and we're facing very likely prospects of retail inflation kicking in this month, which we know is going to happen because that's what the Walmart CEO told us in March. What Walmart's CEO told us in March, I should say. And we know that the European Union is teetering because if Greece goes under, that could very easily put us into recession, according to the IMF. And add in the fact that unemployment is now rising. What we're basically looking at here is hyperinflation with, you know, combination of inflation and recession at the same time combined with high unemployment. I mean, is there a worst possible scenario?
Well, gold prices, as we talked about last week, they're off a little bit, but last week it hit all-time highs in both the pound sterling and the euro. It's down a little bit this week between 1530 and 1540 an ounce. It's in U.S. dollar terms, but that's just another indicator that people really don't like the choices in currencies. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens because, you know, the current gang in charge of the U.S. economy, besides the guys at the Fed, the Democrats, they are looking at 2012 as an election year, and it might be a little bit tempting for them to say, okay, let's take a little bit of pain now and then bail everybody out so they remember it when we get to the ballot box come next November.
And, of course, they're bailing people out. When they're bailing everybody out, shall we say, they're, again, creating more new money out of thin air, which basically fuels the inflationary fires, which I guess Ben Bernanke says don't really exist.
No, there is no inflation.
I think we'll see kind of like the next wave down kind of arriving when you start to see. We already have it to a large degree, but when we have, like, more public proclamations about price controls, on whether it's on gas or wheat or food, really. I think that's going to be like kind of one of the next markers that, you know, things are still on the way down.
That's an interesting question. Will they start talking about price control before they admit that inflation has kicked into gear? We'll have to follow up on that one.
That's a good point.
I'm not sure exactly how that's going
to
play out.
We need to have price controls.
Yeah, they're going to have to. They'll have to come up with that at some point.
Well, we've got much more to cover, including a GATA brief on the appeal for Bernard von Nothaus. That's the guy who was convicted of selling real silver coins and real gold coins. It's an editorial that was in the New York Sun, and Jake's going to report to us about that after the break. Plus, we also have information about what's been going on over in Afghanistan, as well as violence going on in Yemen, Syria, Spain, all over the place. We'll be picking that up after the break. This is the Freedom News Hour, Surviving Meltdown, here on the Progressive Radio Network, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Don't you know you better run, run, run.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, and I am a vegan. No, I am not an alien from planet Vega. I simply choose to eat plant-based foods. Join me on Ask a Vegan every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking about everything from soup to nuts. Plant-based foods are the healthiest foods to eat, as well as being the most economical, the most compassionate, and the least destructive. If you want to know more about the healthy, planet-friendly, plant-based diet, call in with your questions. Or call in and share your favorite vegan recipes. Tune in on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No. Don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the mama grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Come to the Progressive Radio Network each day for the brightest progressive minds in the world.
Back to that radio. Turn that volume back up because the Freedom News Hour Surviving Meltdown is back here with Jake, Gene, and Walt. And as we were talking about before the break, Jake, you brought up the fact that people are becoming more and more concerned about currency. It's not happening in major numbers, but people are beginning to at least take some notice. And this all brings to mind the case of Bernard von Nothaus. That's the guy who created the Liberty Dollar. He actually had the nerve to create money that was made with real gold and silver. And, of course, because he was competing with the U.S. government, he got locked up for it. Well, it turns out that there is an appeal going on, and a brief was filed in the United States District Court for the Western District of North Carolina. And, Jake, who filed that brief?
Well, we had the chairman on our show not all that long ago, Bill Murphy of the organization known as GATA, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, which can be found at gata.org. And they filed an amicus brief arguing that that von Nothaus should receive either an appeal or a retrial of some type. And some of their references, and it's written about in the New York Sun editorial that came out, I believe, just today, is that the judge had gone through and struck areas from the indictment. And what's very interesting is, for instance, in the federal indictment by the federal prosecutor, it stated that the Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution gave government the, quote, the concurrent, so sort of like assumed, power to restrain the circulation of money not issued under its own authority in order to protect and preserve the constitutional currency for the benefit of the nation, unquote. And also struck from the indictment was a sentence which stated, quote, it is a violation of law for private coin systems to compete with the official coinage of the United States, unquote. And the reason that the judge removed these is because these parts of the indictment, he stated, did not seem to be based on facts. It was just the government making up stuff. And so he struck it. So when it went to the jury never saw, they just saw white space where the sentences were. But after von Nauthaus was convicted, what did the government do? The government sent out a press release stating with really just had those two things that the judge deleted reinstated in there. So there, the government's, you know, they convict this guy, which, again, some of the things that he was doing with the coins in terms of calling them dollars, mimicking them, trying to have them passed off as dollars, it's pretty plain that that's a, I don't agree with the particular law, but it's a violation of the law. But what the government does is they go out and they crow about how private coinages all need to be struck down and that they have the power to protect and preserve the constitutional currency, which is a complete laugh because everybody that knows and followed the Coinage Acts of 1790 realized that the dollar was defined as a certain weight of silver, 26.7 grams of silver. And the money has been debased and turned into like this worthless paper that's not backed by anything right now. So all the coins that von Nauthaus gave out over the past few years are worth a lot more in terms of their metal value compared to the Federal Reserve note or the what we know as the dollar. So there's nobody that's, you know, receiving these silver and gold coins that have seen their purchasing power with them go up, you know, three times, five times if it's gold, possibly up to 10 times if it's silver. They're not complaining. Who is complaining is the government because they're pretty much saying that they should be the only folks that are allowed to counterfeit fake money. And and that's the whole thing that's at the heart of GATA trying to help out von Nauthaus.
And what's particularly weird about this whole case is that Article 1, Section 10 specifies that the states may not issue any currency of their own. They can't issue any gold or silver coins. And, in fact, they're prohibited from recognizing anything else other than gold or silver coins. But the Article 1, Section 10, unfortunately, was not written to also prohibit the federal government from issuing anything except gold or silver coins. So here we have a federal government which is basically slipping past the Constitution because they weren't explicitly prohibited from doing it and then claiming that that makes them the legal authority for issuing this junk paper money and cracking down on anybody who has the temerity to try to issue actual gold or silver coins on a private basis that are called the dollar. Which raises a question. Well, it raises a lot of questions, not to mention the most important one, which is why do we have so many criminals running in the government? But the one question that I think it raises directly and immediately is, does the U.S. government, in a rightful sense, have a corner on the market for the word dollar? In other words, if somebody issues another currency called the dollar, is that basically violating the rights of the United States government?
According to them, I think it would be. What about this Utah law that was just passed? That doesn't run up against the federal requirements for currency? Didn't they recognize gold and silver coins in that law? I think it was passed a couple months ago.
Yeah, I haven't read the details on it. I don't believe they actually did anything that violated the U.S. Constitution, and I think they were basically trying to make a statement to the federal government. But you'd have to go read the particular bill that was passed, because I don't think it was so much of a law as a resolution more than anything
else.
But this whole question of what constitutes a dollar is really very important. I mean, our neighbors to the north, they also have a dollar. Are they therefore thumbing their nose at the American government because they issued their own dollar? You know, is it okay for people in other countries to issue dollars but not for U.S. citizens? I mean,
right. Well, what Utah is doing is they have become the first state to recognize gold as legal tender, and its Legal Tender Act of 2011 allows that the gold and silver coins minted by the U.S. government are to be recognized as legal tender in the value that reflects the market price for gold and silver. So I agree with Gene here. This is pretty big stuff. But the key difference is that people in Utah are not compelled to accept the gold and silver coins at market value, but they are now able to. So if you're a shop owner and want to accept gold and silver coins at whatever the market value is or whatever value you decide to, you're then able to do it. Now, what I don't know, I'm not too familiar with how a lot of states have like sales taxes and that sort of thing. I don't know exactly what the deal is in Utah. But just as you said, Walt, Utah passed this bill as kind of a a place to say, you know, we don't like the U.S. dollar and we need to move towards something else that's a lot safer. And a couple other states, like Minnesota, has introduced but has not yet passed a bill to designate gold and silver coin as a legal tender. And the bill, the Minnesota's bill, states that, quote, the currency emitted by the Federal Reserve System has created and threatens to create increasing instability in the governmental finances and private economy of the state of Minnesota, unquote. So we also have Idaho, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, all those states, and I believe New Hampshire in the past, had had resolutions or laws trying to move towards, getting their country or getting their state back in order.
Another somewhat related issue is the issue of the state banks. I think the most financially fit state is the state of North Dakota. I'm not completely sure of that. And they've had a state bank for, I think, decades. And Oregon's one of the – Oregon and Washington are two of the states that are considering a state bank. And the whole idea behind the state bank is just to collect money from people just like any other bank and then use the money to loan it to the state at basically a discounted interest rate, which would save each of the states millions of dollars. And this is something that's, kind of a decent idea. It's not necessarily trying to get the states into more debt, but try to take some of the debt away that's caused by the interest, the high interest rates charged by the banks. So.
Well, I'm not sure what kind of an idea that is. That's probably another topic. But on the topic that we're talking about, the point I want to make is that both the Utah law and these other laws that have been passed, they're really show laws. They don't really accomplish anything. Yes, it's good that they're taking these steps, but until you remove, I believe it's Title 18, Section 486 of the U.S. Code, which outlaws the use of gold and silver coins, all these legal tender laws being passed by the states really amount to a little more than a protest. They don't have any weight.
What happens in Utah if people actually start taking it into their own hands and using gold and silver?
Right. It'll be a case of Article or the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. It'll be I think what you're probably going to look at is a case where if that starts becoming widespread, is that the federal government is probably going to file suit against the state, and you're going to have a case of the state claiming that it's nullification, really.
Yeah, and I think that's what all these add up to. They add up to state nullification efforts. I don't think the first effort by the feds is going to be to go after the states with a lawsuit. I think the first effort by the feds is going to be to go after somebody who actually tried to trade gold and silver within those states, because it may be legal within Utah, but it's illegal within the United States, and that's going to be the basis for their case.
Good point.
That's a possibility, especially if they try to do it out of state lines, like let's say between two states that have allowed that or passed a resolution, as you said.
And Gene, you brought up the idea of state banks and how Washington, California, and you mentioned North Dakota all considering the idea of bringing in a state bank for people to bank with and lend the money out to the state government. It's not a new idea. It's been around for a while. And in fact, we had a guest on the show a year ago, May 2010. Ellen Brown is an author.
And I'm really sad that I missed that one.
Yeah. Well, it's in the archives. You can definitely go hear the show.
I would have loved it.
It was a little contentious, to say the least. But she basically argued for the same general idea. And the problem with it is that just because a bank is lending to the state at low or actually most likely no interest.
Yeah, usually no interest.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that the bank is no longer creating money out of thin air the way the banks always do, because that's exactly what they are doing. And it becomes essentially a license to create unlimited amounts of money on behalf of the state bank. So what we've already seen done at the federal level, with the federal government going miles and miles into debt, far beyond anything we could possibly pay off, by creating huge amounts of money out of thin air at the hands of the Federal Reserve, they're now proposing we should do the same thing at the state level. And to me, it doesn't make sense to compound a felony.
I think that's true. I think that's two issues, and what you say is true as far as Ellen and many people who think like or believe that actually the state should be given the right to create money. But I think the other issue, actually having a state bank that operates like a normal bank, doesn't operate like the Federal Reserve, is, you know, a different issue. But that's a good point. There is a complete group of people on the, I guess you'd call it the far left critics of the money system that believe that instead of getting rid of the Federal Reserve, you should just have all the states be their own Federal Reserves.
Yes, especially what they're arguing for.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure it's all that different, really, Jamie.
No, I agree.
Because even with these state banks, where if they're not playing the role of being just a money creator, just the act of being a banker creates money. I mean, you don't have to play the role of a central bank.
In the sense of the reserve requirements, that's true.
It was not just reserve requirements, but the fact that you are essentially lending out money that you are simultaneously promising to return to depositors at the same time. Right. That creates new money. That's essentially an inflationary
activity. There is no difference between a state bank doing it and the state of Oregon going to First Interstate Bank and saying, let's have a loan. So you're not, you're not creating money as the Fed creates money, as we say from the
You just have a new authority creating the money.
New authority, right.
Just what we need, more fiat money being created.
More people.
More ways to destroy the economy within your lifetime.
And one of the key dates that also happens to be in June, June 22nd is when the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee will be releasing a statement. So that'll be another key date to watch. And there won't be any FOMC meetings until August 9th after that. So we'll be taking July off to go to the tropics or whatever on their banker vacations. But June 22nd will be a key date. Most likely somewhere in that statement they'll have to be addressing the interest rate and also what they're going to be doing in terms of QE3.
I'm going to make a little prediction here. I could be wrong, and this is just kind of off the cuff. I don't really have any basis for this. But my prediction is this. Yes, that's going to be their last statement of the summer until next August, but I'll be willing to bet that I'll bet you a quarter that there's going to be an emergency meeting called sometime in July, because in theory, according to all the longtime experts, the summertime is a slow time, not much happens and so forth. But, Jake, I know you read a lot of the same newsletters and so forth that I read. There's a lot of speculation, particularly among the people who are expert in the gold and silver markets, that this is going to be a very volatile summer, not just in precious metals, but in the stock market and so on and so forth. I would be not surprised at all if the Fed convened an emergency meeting because all of a sudden, everything started to go to heck in a handbasket.
Well, the stock market's terribly inflated. I mean, we had that article last week saying that, and I totally agree with it. I mean, it's ridiculously inflated.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And meanwhile, of course, the Republicans and Democrats continue to volley back and forth. And, gee, I know you have an interesting article about how they are trading positions, and this is kind of like the fallout from this whole financial issue that we were talking about. What's the specifics of the details of the article you've got?
This is pretty interesting. It's on Social Security and Medicare and what to do about it or did he do anything. And goes on to say Bernie Sanders, who is the Senate's only avowed socialist, might be the chamber's fiercest advocate of taxing the rich to cut the federal deficit. That doesn't mean he wants to reduce their Social Security and Medicare benefits. On the other hand, Republican Paul Ryan, the Republican chairman of the House Budget Committee, wants to give the wealthy big tax breaks to encourage them to invest and create jobs, but he also wants to take away many of their retirement benefits. So the tables are kind of turning, and they're taking different sides. The Democrats say that Social Security and Medicare have endured because they offer benefits to people of all incomes, and accuse Republicans of trying to kill the programs by stripping away their beneficiaries, beginning with the rich, if you can believe that. And Republicans say the fairest way to curb the deficit is to scale back the programs for those who need them the least. Polls are showing that the public supports limiting benefits to the wealthy, and some Democratic leaders are beginning to signal a willingness to consider the idea. The rich may face cuts as lawmakers debate how to curb the national debt. Sanders, the socialist, said that the strength of Social Security and Medicare is that everybody is in. That's what he said. He's actually a Vermont independent. It says, once you start breaking that universality and you say that if you're above a certain income, 2 years later that income goes down, and that's probably true, and 10 years later it becomes a welfare program. And on the other hand, Ryan said, the thing that tears the social contract is insolvency. Means testing is an obvious solution to our fiscal problems. The alternative is everybody gets cut, so why don't we put the money where it should be to the people who need it? I've had Senator Dick Durbin said, I've had a lot of people who are very wealthy and retired who ask me why they continue to receive a full Social Security check. It's a legitimate question. So, you know, this question is kind of grouping, politicians and strange bedfellows. And they're kind of trying to decide which side to take, and it's confusing matters a little. But they're already confused to start with, so it doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't take much at all. And, in fact, the report basically shows just how convoluted the whole mess is, to the point where the two sides are taking minor positions against each other on what is essentially a major issue that's going to explode in our faces if they don't take major steps to change it. And they're talking about, you know, essentially nothing more than, say the equivalent of who gets to sit at what part of the table.
And what they get to eat.
Yeah.
And we always can go back to the $2.5 trillion in the Social Security surplus fund that it has been exchanged for a U.S. government security that's a special security. And this just came out. This has been happening since Ronald Reagan. It's a special security that cannot be traded on the world market, which basically means in order to get that surplus fund back, the taxpayer will have to pay it back.
Oh, good grief. Well, I guess it's depressing to know all these things that are happening here, but there's also much more depressing things happening in other areas. In fact, horrible things have been happening over in Afghanistan and Pakistan. I know both of you guys have stuff to talk about. Let's go to you first about a particular Taliban raid that crossed the Afghan border and the issues that raised.
Oh, yeah. Yesterday or so, on Wednesday, there was a raid of 200 to 400 Taliban/insurgents that crossed into Pakistan and started blowing up villages and attacking government areas, and resulted in 63 deaths so far. And what's kind of interesting about this is that Pakistan's generals have gotten up and they hold press conferences and talk about how the NATO and the United States needs to keep their border closed. And that just seems a bit funny, because the United States spent the past decade or so doing exactly the opposite, claiming that insurgents were coming over from Pakistan and operating in Afghanistan, causing trouble. So it's a pretty interesting deal. Obviously, this goes on, as we covered in the preceding weeks, after tensions have kind of been raised after the bin Laden raid, where bin Laden was found hanging out inside a retirement community for retired military officers a couple miles from a golf course on a big compound in Pakistan. So it's not exactly the best situation for the United States, but
it's certainly not the only way that the U.S. is in trouble, because not only are they not holding the border, but they're actually being blamed for civilian casualties at an alarming rate. Gene, I know you got some details about that. Give us those.
Yeah, this has popped up again and again in two different instances. At least 36 Afghan police officers and civilians have been killed in two separate airstrikes by NATO-led forces, Afghan officials said, and the reported deaths of 14 civilians in southern eastern Nuristan province Wednesday are just making things worse. President Karzai on Saturday called for the end of all unilateral NATO military operations and night raids by special operation troops. He issued a statement Sunday, strongly condemned the civilian deaths. He said American and NATO troops have been repeatedly warned that their willful and inappropriate operations cause daily the killings of innocent and desperate people, and that such raids trample underfoot the human and moral values. But it seems that they do not heed. He continued to criticize. It said it in Helmand that the 14 dead were 5 girls, 2 women, and 7 boys. And in the other raid, they said that of those killed included 70 Taliban fighters, 22 police officers who weren't involved in the actual fight, and an unknown number of civilians. So it's two instances that are going to cause even more problems. Karzai also termed the deaths of women and children a major mistake, obviously, and said he had issued his last warning to NATO and the U.S. troops.
Right, last of the last of the last.
Last of the last of the many. And here's another, this is kind of related, but not really, but it's also kind of funny in a weird sort of way.
That's because we have a strange sense of humor.
In another development, a commission appointed by Karzai to assess responsibility for the enormous fraud at the Kabul Bank, and we talked about that on the show, issued its report Sunday absolving the president's brother of any blame.
Oh, God.
it's amazing. You know, he appoints the commission to investigate his brother. I mean, that's...
Yes, well, I guess we shouldn't be terribly surprised, but the sad part, of course, from both of those reports is all the violence that's taking place and a lot of it being perpetrated in participation with NATO and the U.S. military. And, of course, the violence isn't just limited to Afghanistan and Pakistan, but it's still continuing throughout the Middle East. I mean, Jake, I know you have some stuff about what's been going on in Yemen and Syria and so forth. The violence just continues and continues and continues.
Right, and in Syria, the government tanks bombed a town center in Rastan, the town of Rastan, killing at least 41, which brings the overall toll to around 1,000 protesters since the rallies began in March, which I might add was it's probably quite a bit higher than the than before the government began hostilities against the rebels in Syria. And another 41, at least 41, have died in overnight fighting in the capital of Yemen. Gunfire and explosions continue across the city as the tribe continues to attack government buildings, and they captured a nearby military camp since, again, the president of that country is supposed to leave, and he doesn't want to. So it's... It's quite a pretty bad situation. You have instability really all throughout the world. And when you take a look at it, you can tie it all the way back to foreign policy. Not just to the United States, but really of us sending too many soldiers abroad, and also this money printing, because a lot of the people that are rioting, they're rioting because they're not happy with their lives. They can't afford food. And they just see their lives being wasted as their governments really don't let them advance in their lives.
That's a very sad thing. Well, unfortunately, we're reaching the end of the hour here, and it's sad to leave it on such a sour note. I guess the best thing that we can say as a happy note is if you have some money, start putting it aside into precious metals if you haven't been doing it already, because things are going to get worse before they get better, unfortunately. And Jake and Gene, that's it for this week. Thanks for joining us on the show. And by the way, check out the website at www.freedomnewshour.com to find out all the latest and greatest. Guys, it's been a pleasure.
Okay.
All right, take care.
And we'll see you all next week.
Incredible shrinking dollar.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Talking about a revolution sounds.